Today's presenter is Michael Poyer. After spending many years as a mainframe consultant and lecturer, Mike joined IBM in September 2006 as part of the Java ZOS service team, where he is still working today. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Mike.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. It's Mike Poyle here, and welcome to today's presentation. On slide two, looking at the agenda, basically what I'm going to do is give you a little bit of background to the subject matter. I'm going to be discussing a case study on an internal problem that we had with an out-of-memory error in ZOS storage. I'm then going to be looking at the part of LE that LE plays in Java. And moving on to slide three, I'm going to be looking at runtime options, things that you might want to tweak to help storage availability. I'm then going to discuss a few more things you might need to know and bring the whole presentation into land. Okay, moving on to slide four. Background to why this presentation is here. As a service engineer, myself and others have to deal with a number of customer problems to do with native, that is ZOS, storage problems. They're becoming slightly more frequent than before, basically because many customers are pushing the storage limits that are available on ZOS. And also, there are a few problems that have come up in IBM software or even customer applications. One of the problems is that there isn't a magic 64-bit silver bullet yet. I know customers have been to think that they may have to go that way, but it may not be an easy move. One of the things that we find over here is that many people don't know how to even do basic problem determination, which is something I'm going to show today. And lastly, on slide four, when I say Java 5, I do actually mean Java 5 and Java 6. And just for your information, the JVMs for those Java versions are very different to the version that you have in 1.4.2. It's a very different product by the time you get to Java 5. Moving on to slide 5. 31-bit addressing gives you 2 gigabytes, but by the time you get rid of the ZOS shared area and the local system queue area, or LSQA, you can end up with as little as 1 gigabyte available for the JVM to live in. And I have seen customers reduce this even further by a region size limit, which is often not a good idea. The storage that we are working with is managed by ZOS at the bottom using the Virtual Storage Manager, GetMain, FreeMain services, although the JVM talks directly to LE language environment using the C functions like malloc and free. So essentially LE is managing the storage using ZOS services. And when a C program issues a malloc, LE will sub-allocate from an area of storage it's already got. If there's none available in that area, then it will get main some more. LE does do free mains, but only strictly under strictly controlled circumstances, which I'll explain shortly. Moving on to slide 6. LE runtime options. They can be important because they having them set correctly may help you if you have storage availability problems. Now, the examples that I've given you on slide 6 are standard settings for WebSphere application server. Not all the parameters, but some of the ones I want to mention right now. Firstly, the LE heap runtime option. This manages the malloc activity within the JVM, and the settings you see there say that when the JVM starts up, 18 megabytes of storage is acquired initially with a minimum of 4 megabyte increments as and when LE needs more storage. Any so that it can be allocated anywhere within the 2 gigabyte address space, above the line preferably, but below the line if necessary. And if you're getting storage allocated below the line, you're going to be very soon in problems. Keep is what happens when a complete 4 megabyte increment is empty. Ellie will retain it for further allocations. If you had 3, then Ellie would at that time free main the storage back to ZOS to reuse. The second runtime option is stack. Now, this one can be quite important from a general performance point of view, and the WebSphere settings are actually pretty good. Each JVM thread, and there are many threads in a JVM, needs stack storage to work with, for register save areas, automatic variables, and things like that. And each thread has 2 types of stack segments, which is what the stack runtime option manages. The important ones are the ones at the very end, the 512K, 128K. These are to do with what's called XP-Link downstack segments. And the JVM from 1.4.2 upwards uses XP-Link as the technique for function-to-function communication. The first 2 are to do with a user stack, which the JVM uses a lot less of. Again, Keep says that if a stack segment increment is empty, Ellie will hold on to it, free would free it. Now, I have seen a free setting cause bad problems, and I'll elaborate on that a little bit more later. The any heap parameter, again, the values that work in a similar way control Ellie-owned storage and also the user stack segments defined by the stack runtime option. Now, I'm going to move on to a case study shortly, and I'm going to be looking at some IPCS dump outputs, because that will give us a good idea of what the JVM is using. One last point is that about a month ago, you had a presentation by Mark Walden from WebSphere, which gives some a different view of these kind of problems. I've tried, where possible, not to duplicate what he's done, but to provide a slightly different emphasis. Moving on to slide 7. This is part of the output from the IPCS Verbex PSN data command, which shows us what our ZOS region looks like. What we have here is a typical scenario where we have just about run out of storage. The map that we see, the local storage map, shows us our 2 gigabyte region. We can see by max X user region address being at the top of the region that the user has not put a limit on the region size that's used. Instead, what puts the limit on the region size is the amount of storage that's available between the extended user region start and the ELSQA bottom, as you can see by the maths on the right-hand side of the page. We have fractionally over 1,200 megabytes available for the JVM to use, which is perhaps a little bit tight. Moving on to slide 8. What does a JVM look like in terms of storage? Well, it's essentially a whole series of storage allocations within the user region and in the LSQA area. In Verbex BSN data, you'll see these owned by one task control block or TCV, although it will be shared with other JVM tasks, of which there may be tens or even hundreds. It's pretty easy to spot the owner. And you'll find this in the BSN data output shortly after the local storage map. Where does the JVM grab storage? Well, basically, it's in ZOS subpools numbered 1, 2, 129, 130, 230, and 252. Subpooling is used by the virtual storage manager as a way to logically group together storage that is of a similar type. So those are the subpools that are mostly used by the JVM. If you see storage in other subpools, then it may not be, it's more likely not the JVM that is using that. Moving on to slide 9. And here I have a picture summing up the JVM storage usage in the local subpool usage summary. As I say, this was a real problem. It was an internal IBM problem, not a customer problem. And you can see the JVM storage there summarized at the end by the TCV address. You might find it useful to note down the TCV address because it can be useful when finding out information from the LE part of the dump. Now, looking at the various subpools that are in use, subpool 1 is primarily any heap storage, which is user stat segments, but it has also got the initial heap allocation based on the heap runtime option. Subpool 2, which is normally a lot bigger, is primarily the LE heap increments, also the thread downstacks. So that's not necessarily all the explanation, but from a JVM point of view, that is what the JVM is using there. Subpool 129, in this case, is the Java 5 class cache of 50 megabytes. Subpool 129 can also be used for memory map jar files. They weren't being used in this particular case. Subpool 230 is mostly the USS VPX PRM member parameter called share lib region size. The share lib region size is an allocation of memory held by USS for shared DLLs. And it's a system-wide setting, and it's an area that contains JVM DLLs, like libjvm.so, but it can also contain non-JVM DLLs. And unfortunately, that will impact the storage availability in your region. We also see subpool 252, which is for DLLs that are loaded into the region that are not in the share lib region area. We don't see any subpool 130 storage in this case because they're for the shareable DLLs that are mapped in the share lib region size. Now, if you sum that up, ignoring subpool 230, it comes to 12, 16 megabytes, which is pretty close to the available storage. Moving on to slide 10. This is an explanation of what I said on the prior slide, basically saying subpool 1 is mostly LEM storage and stacks. Most of the JVM will be in subpool 2. Subpool 129 is shared memory. Moving on to slide 11. Subpool 230, key 0, is mostly share lib region size. And what I've done in this case is I've got the internal customer to use the ZOS command DOMDS,L. And that shows me that of the 143 megabytes set aside for the shared library region, currently only about 19 megabytes is in use. Now, the way that USS works is that the whole 143 megabytes is removed from your region. Not the actual user region storage, but the ELSQA, which effectively limits how far your user region can go. So, not particularly good setting in this case. There's a lot of space there that is unusable. Subpools 130252, I mentioned on slide 9. So moving on to slide 12. What uses up the storage? Well, typically the biggest user of the region storage is the JVM itself. Now, some people don't know that this is allocated based on the minus XMS parameter, not minus XMS. It has to be one contiguous area of storage. So that's allocated up front when the JVM initializes. And only if you've got a minus XMS value of 1 gigabyte, which was this case, with only 1200 megabytes available to you, there's not going to be a lot of room left. So one of the things that we look at this end when a customer has a problem is, does the JVM heap really have to be that big? In some cases, the answer to that is no, which can give a decent amount of storage back for the JVM to use for other things. Now, if you don't know how to work out how the JVM heap is being used, I've provided a link which gives you access to information about a verbose GC analyzer that used to be called EVTK. It's now called GCMV, Garbage Collection and Memory Visualizer. Basically, you feed verbose GC output into that, and it draws nice graphs showing you how much storage you're using. In terms of sizing the JVM heap, you want to aim for around 1.5 times the current usage after a GC. Now, that's you can go less than that, but if you go less than that, then it is more likely that you're going to get into heap compaction, which can be time-consuming. So that's a rough idea. Size the JVM heap to about 1.5 times the typical usage after a GC. You can go up or down from that, obviously. Moving on to slide 13. What else? A problem that you had with Java 1.4.2 was that the JIT can allocate a lot of buffers. We've seen cases where 150 megabytes plus of buffers. There is a fix in SR9 which will reduce that. Java 5 uses less storage, fortunately, and these are 8 megabyte buffers. We'll see those in a little bit more detail later in a Java core. Okay, one issue that's coming up more frequently now as customers are moving over, particularly to WebSphere 6.1 and Java 5, is that the fast loader is using more native storage than before. In terms of technical talk, we're talking about ROM classes and RAM classes. A ROM class is the read-only representation of a Java class as it's stored in native storage. And a RAM class is the read-write component of it. Now, these can take up quite a lot of storage, and they often come up as leak candidates, where they may not be as such. But it's quite a change in terms of usage between Java 1.4.2, where people have a lot of experience, and Java 5, where people have less. Another aspect of fast loading that can increase usage is that if you're using Java 5 shared classes, the minus X shared classes command line option, you can use more virtual storage than without them if you have over-allocated the shared class cache size. Again, like shared libregion size, USS has to carve out the whole of the size in its one of its shared data spaces. So it's worth checking with a minus X shared classes print stats to see whether it is actually sufficiently used or not. As I said, if required, delete and rebuild it with a revised shared class maximum storage size. One thing that I have noticed is that ROM classes in the shared class cache are packed more efficiently than those that are not shared. I have seen cases where it actually would have been more efficient to have a larger shared cache size and so have less storage used for dynamically allocated RAM classes. Moving on to slide 14. Okay, native storage, this is based on questions that we often get. You know, why is so much native storage required over and above the JVM heap? Well, it's the way it is. I mean, it's quite legal to have several hundred megabytes of storage used above the JVM heap, not because it's a leak, it's just a function of usage, either by the JVM, the customer application, or by the products like WebSphere that are using Java. And lastly, if the storage problem that you're seeing is not in the subpools 1.2, 1.2.9, 1.2.30, it's likely not to be the JVM that's at fault. However, I have seen an IBM product use subpool 1 and it created an out-of-memory error. So, like all things, the rules are like this, but there are always exceptions to the rule. So, don't always blame JVM. It may be someone else's software that's causing the problem. Okay, just to summarize, before I've given you a bit of background information about how to spot the memory, what uses the memory, what did I do for this case study? Well, the user region size of just over 1200 megabytes is a little bit on the small side perhaps. I found that almost all of that was used by the JVM. I also found that there's the 1 gigabyte JVM heap, and that was actually very, very underutilized, but I found that there was no option. It had to stay like that. So only 194 megabytes was actually available after the heap was allocated, which is quite small. The probability from my point of view was that the region size is an issue. It's just too small to contain what we had to do. So one of the things that I noticed was that the ZOS shared area was quite large, larger than I was used to seeing using the local storage map a few slides ago. And I went back to the systems program and asked him if it really needed to be that big. And he had a look at it and said, actually, no. This particular LPAR, the extended common storage area, is actually much bigger than it needs to be, given the other LPARs that we're using. He reduced it by 200 megabytes, and the application ran fine. So it is possible that out-of-memory errors are actually not due to leaks. It can be due to simple cases like configuration problems, just to bear that in mind. Also, the shared library region was over-allocated as well, and we could have got back maybe 100 megabytes from that. So in this case, the problem was solved quite simply by adjusting the sizes of the ZOS region, and magically the application worked. However, I wish they were always that easy. Okay, moving on to slide 16. Java 5. If you happen to get a Java core because of the out-of-memory error, which is often quite normal, then this just explains where some of the storage is going. Under the meminfo subcomponents, you can see how much heap is currently used and how much is currently free. The allocated 1 and 5 zeros is 1 megabyte. That's not minus XMX. Incidentally, this is not the previous case study. I didn't have a Java core for that. This is just a vanilla Hello World that was running, just to give you an idea. Internal memory is, as it says, it's just like subpooling within the JVM for generic storage allocations. object memory represents the current status of the heap, which is 1 megabyte out of the 64 megabyte minus XMX. And the class memory shows you how the ROM and RAM classes are currently allocated. Incidentally, I've given you the mathematics for calculating how well the segments are used. Now, these are segments, and in each segment will be one or more of the ROM or RAM classes that they're packed together. If you take away the start from the alloc value, that will give you the current usage of that particular segment. And these can show less than 100% used. Type 10040 is RAM class, 20040 is ROM class, and 20104 is cached ROM class. Only the ROM classes are actually cached. You can't cache RAM classes. Now, the last cached ROM class has got a bytes of ECC120. That is mostly unused. The print stats on that one showed me that the cache was only 8% utilized of the 16 megabytes available. So just a word of a reminder that when you're allocating a shared class cache, make sure that it is allocated reasonably compared with its content, otherwise you'll be wasting storage in your region. Over the page we have information about JIT. JIT starts off with 2 8 meg buffers for code and for data, and it extends the numbers as required. And lastly, in Java Core, even if you haven't got verbose GC active, you will get the last N bits of GC information, which can be quite useful, certainly from our point of view, because often we're asking customers to turn verbose GC on. And if there's a Java Core, well, we have some of that available, which may be useful. This was a system GC call. That was in the Hello World application. And it gives us the timings for the various components of the GC and where you see things like hold space number / number. It's the left-hand side of the / is the free and the right-hand side is the total. So 319976 is the free of 104.8576. Okay, so the Java call gives us a bit of information about what the JVM is using. It's not complete, but if we're looking at class loading information, then it gives us some useful information about ROM class and RAM class usage. Okay, moving on to LE. Now, you may find that IBMers put information in PMRs from something called BossHeap. BossHeap is a REX program which post-processes the IPCS Verbex LE data output. And the IBMers often use that to see where the leaks are. Now, as LE is handling the mallocs for the individual elements, looking at the VSN data may not be that productive. So what we do is we run Verbex LE data and print the output to a disk and then post-process it with BossHeap. Now, apparently, we've been asked to ask customers to lean on LE to actually provide this as standard, because it can be incredibly useful in most cases, not in this case. So BossHeap is a REX program. You can write something yourself if you're familiar with REX, which processes Verbex LE data output. An example of which is on slide 19. Okay, so the output from Verbex LE data gives us information about the segments, A heap segment is an allocation like the 80 megabytes, the 4 megabytes, or maybe 6 megabytes. That's the individual, that is the, what is get main from ZOS. And Verbex Elidata then breaks that down into each element and its size. So it essentially, obviously, just whizzes through that and it extracts appropriate information. And slide 20 gives you an idea of what it was like to us, would look like to us as IBMers. It gives us some information about the sizes, and it gives us information about each segment, that's each get main area. User, primary, is at the top, which is our 18 megabytes, and following that are user increments. The increments in brackets is my annotation. You won't see that in WASI. And the second one there is the 1 gigabyte heap, which is slightly over 1 gigabyte by the time that the JVM adds a few bits and pieces. Anywhere is any heap, and again we have anywhere primary, anywhere increment. And what this does is also not only summarise the allocated areas, but also gives us an idea of what's free in each of these segments, which can be interesting reading in some cases. Moving on to slide 21. My version of it summarises the overall usage, and in this particular case of the 1 gigabyte and a bit that's been allocated to user storage, there's only fractionally over 1 megabyte that's actually free. So we don't have any fragmentation problems in this dump. It is well utilised. BOSI also gives us information about the allocated element sizes and the number of times they occur. This is how we tend to look at things when trying to find memory leaks. You know, have we got a large number of elements occupying a large amount of storage? In this case, no. On slide 21, I've shown you how to identify the sizes of the JIT buffers, which is particularly important for Java 1.4.2. The LE allocation size is 7553032. All reported sizes include 8 bytes for LE control information, and just some background element sizes, hex 8010, 1008, well, not all of those, and 2008 are to do with class loading. Again, PMRs I've seen saying we see a lot of these LE allocations, we think they're a leak. Well, actually, they're probably not a leak. It's just the class loader having to load lots of classes. Moving on to slide 22. Okay, now we get to the important question. Do I have a storage leak? I know I've got an out-of-memory error. I've got something like an 87810 event. Surely it's a storage leak. Well, it may not be. It can be difficult to differentiate between what is normal usage and what is a leak, particularly if you've just changed to, say, Java 5, you've changed something in your application, perhaps. It's quite hard sometimes to determine, particularly in a DOS environment, because the amount of storage can be so constrained. IBM staff may ask for the LE heap check to be run. There are various ways of running that, and Mark Walden's presentation provided a lot more background information on that. But essentially, it's heap check on, and then the 20, 0020, the 20 in that case is the size of the stack trace that you will get for each allocation that does not have a free. How you set on heap check depends basically on what software you're running. Where it gets set depends on that. On normal termination, a CE dump is produced, a formatted dump containing function tracebacks for every allocation that did not have a free. Now, a lot of those might be quite normal. What you're looking for is ones that repeat a lot. Bearing in mind that the class loader ones often repeat a lot. not due to leaks, just due to the level of cloud loading. Over the page, on slide 23, that just gives you an idea of what we see at this end when we get the CE dump outputs. This was a case from an IBM product, and basically between LE and the product owner, they were able to identify which product and where in the product it was going wrong. J9 allocate memory is the function that actually does the allocation. And if we go back, it was from a JVMTI function that the problem was happening. It's a monitoring product that was causing the problem. It wasn't a customer problem. But that's what the entries look like. Allocating length BA0, so the actual user allocation was around BA8, anything from BA1 to BA8 bytes. Now, slide 24, an example of an unusual leak. In this case, Bossy showed me that of the 1 gigabyte allocated, nearly half of that was free. Minus XMX was something like about 256 megabytes, and we were using well over a gigabyte of storage by the time it went into an out-of-memory situation. And what I was actually able to see was a whole series of empty increments from the LE data output and BOSS heap output. And essentially what the problem was in that case was that the JVM was asking LE to allocate storage where the storage area was of a continually increasing size. And it ended up being a problem in the user application. Processing a file, and the file kept growing. Someone had sneaked through a change to the application without telling us this prox. In this particular case, using the heap free parameter might have actually bought them some time, because what I could see was a lot of LE increments that were empty that could have been used for something else. So knowing a bit about the LE runtime options can sometimes give you a bit of breathing space, or even make it work. I've had several PMRs where I've asked the customer to change LE settings and the application has subsequently worked. Again, they're often on in region sizes that are kind of close to the limit. Slide 25, LE runtime options. I've given you the manuals. Point number two says, the LE runtime options are often stored as constants in the software that creates the JVM. Now, Web3 application server has different options to the standard Java launcher. Runtime options can be provided, which sometimes can help situations, providing that the customer doesn't set the LE defaults with non-override, which I've not seen yet, but it's potentially possible. Slide 26. Runtime options that I use with portops on. What LE options am I running with? They will come out on standard error. With port storage on, shows LE storage statistics, again in standard error, useful for sizing things like stacks. Thread stack equals, I haven't mentioned thread stack yet, but thread stack is like stack, but when it's set on by the customer or by the Pragma runoff, then it's what is used for the second and subsequent thread in terms of stack allocations. As that's typically not set by a JVM launcher, a bad installation default for thread stack can cause problems. I've seen that. So problems can arise due to customer configuration. I've given you some sample report storage output, which shows you how to read the information. Stats statistics The ones at the top, stack statistics and thread stack statistics, that's user stack. And that can be quite useful for determining whether the stack parameters 1 and 2 are oversized or not. As you see, the initial size is 128K, and the largest use is actually only fractionally over 40K. Now, when you're running hundreds of threads, oversizing the stack segment can actually cause a problem. I've seen it happen. So it might be useful to tweak the stack parameter and reduce, particularly parameter 1, to give yourself some more storage back. Now, I have seen problems where maybe customers running 600 threads, and if you get that wrong, it can really add up. Then you have the XP link, which is where most of the JVM work is done. And you can see there the largest used by any thread, 524.116, is coming close to the initial size. Not necessarily a problem, but in some circumstances, it can be. Then we've got heap statistics and additional heap statistics. If you're running Java 1.4.2, you will always see 5 create heap requests under additional heap statistics. That's for the JVM heap and for the control blocks. You won't see that for Java 5. So between heap statistics and additional heap statistics, that then leads you as to how much storage it's using. Sometimes it's useful to cross-check that with tuples 1 and 2, just in case someone else is using those areas. Of course, any heap statistics is also tuple 1. I would suggest that suggested initial size is not the way to go on that. Okay, why can stack be so important? Well, an example here to illustrate the most stupid case. I ran a Hello World application with a very small stack size with a free option. And you can see from the XP link stack statistics that it had over 250,000 stack allocations and deallocations. Now, again, this is background information for customers. Every time LE has to extend the XP link stack, you get a page fault, a system 0411 program check. This is normal operation. To run Hello World, there were over 250,000 program checks. And that is what caused it to take so much extra time. Now, you might think this is stupid. Yes, it's an extreme case. But I put this in because of problems I've seen in PMRs. You know, why are we getting all these system 0C4 program checks without a bend? Well, that is normal LE operation. Okay, moving on to slide 30. This is a case of an inappropriate choice of the user stack increment size and the any heap increment size. Basically, for every thread, we had 512K allocated, of which slightly over half was used. Now, bearing in mind in this case, there were something like 500 threads, we were ending up using a lot of storage. And basically, the recommendation was change any heap for this particular case to make it more efficient. So report storage output may sometimes be asked for because we can use it over here to check to see whether some of the LE settings could be tweaked to make the storage usage a bit better. Okay, heap pools. Heap pools are designed to reduce the time and contention within LE heap pool management. And the example that I've got on slide 31 is a typical setting for WebSphere application server. Basically, LE allocates cells based on the length, like 24, and a percentage of the heap initial allocation. So rather than have individual LE heap allocations, LE grabs an element based on the product of the size and the percentage and fulfills, uses that to fulfill malloc requests within that size range. Elliot acquires extra instruments as required, so you don't have to size it for the maximum usage. But slide 32 shows you that although heat pores can be useful in reducing overhead, they can actually use more storage than without heat pores on. In this particular case, we had a pore size of 128, and that holds requests of size from 33 to 128 bytes. And you can see here there are a lot of requests down at the bottom end of the pore size. So if you had a 33-byte request, you were still taking 128 bytes worth of storage. It's actually 136 bytes. So heat pores, although it can be useful, if your memory, your storage constraint can cause more storage usage than without them. Slide 33, it shows you the summary of report storage output. It shows you how to work out whether the heat pore settings are over-allocated or perhaps under-allocated. Over-allocated is probably more important if you're running short of storage. And it says there's no one-size-fits-all perfectly. Yeah, heat pores is useful, but it may be necessary to tune individual applications. Okay, other things you may need to know. Coming, finalizing things now. In the early runtime options, never use the below in any of the options that you've got in this presentation, unless you want an out-of-memory error. Yes, there has been a PMR for this. Okay, another issue that comes up from time to time, it's a USS setting that can have an impact. Again, PMRs have been raised as a result of this. Setting the palmlib BTXPRM member max threads or max thread task too small can create a message like Java lang out of memory failed to fork OS thread. The JVM cannot create a new thread, but it can raise it as an out of memory error, which can be slightly confusing. And lastly, there's a recent APAR PK50104 describing a leak that's been fixed recently. So settings in LE and settings in USS can cause problems as well. One of the things we have to deal with here is go through all the possible configuration settings. Are they set appropriately? Yes, no. And then decide how to handle the PMR from there. Right, just to summarise and land this presentation. A JVM can use a lot of storage. That can be quite normal. If you're working with KIX, it could be XMX plus tens of megabytes, but typically it's hundreds of megabytes over the top. The JVM storage usage can be summarized by looking at the Verbex DSM data output in the subpools mentioned there, 1.2.1.2.9, 1.30.2.13.2.5.2. Don't forget, host software also needs storage to operate. WebSphere, DB2, MQ, they all consume native storage. And it may be a simple setup issue rather than a leak. Don't assume because you've got an out-of-memory error in native storage that it's a leak. That may not be the case. If you want to know more about this, then that's what we're here for. Digging deeper than checking a few things requires expert knowledge, which is provided by Level 2 and Level 3. And lastly, LE can be tweaked to, in some cases, to get around some of the native storage problems that we've seen. I'm not saying that's always going to work, but that may be recommended by someone over in Level 3, like myself. I had seen that cure some native outer storage problems. Not all of them, but just some of them. And LE is not difficult to tweak. Slide 36, URLs for WebSphere product resources, and slide 37, I finished. Thank you for listening to me. So I'll open it now for any questions.
And we'll take our first question from Jules Musel with Wells Fargo.
You mentioned a Rex tool called Boss Heap. Where is that available?
It's an internal IBM tool.
Ah, internal, so it's not available outside of IBM.
No, but what you will often see is a comment in a PMR about Boss Heap, or you will see perhaps a snippet of information along the lines of what you saw in the presentation, showing you heap segments usage information. So although I can't give you the code, it's just to make you familiar with the terminology and some of the information you may see in the PMR.
Thank you.
And we're trying to convince LE to provide that sort of information as standard, because it's really very helpful, because we can see where the largest hitters are. We can, for each of those large hitters, we can see where they're allocated in storage. What we can't see is who's allocating them, which is where HeapCheck can be useful. But it's an incredibly useful tool. You'll see level 2 and level 3 is using it quite frequently.
Thank you very much.
It appears we have no further questions at this time.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the website, Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining today, and thank you, Mike, for presenting today.